supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we have a very interesting question of the week. A common problem is when trees appear to be dripping sap at this time of year. Well, guess what? It ain't sap. We'll tell you what things it could be when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, more of your sappy phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Naomi, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Naomi. How are you?
I'm doing well. And how are you?
I am just ducky. Thank you for asking. Where is Naomi doing well?
I am in Jonesboro, Tennessee.
The Tri-Cities area.
That's right.
All right. What can we do for Naomi in Tennessee?
I have lots of fig bushes. Well, it's one bush with lots of stems, and I've had it for about 10 years, and it produced wonderful fruit for about 5 years. But the last 2 years, the fruit is coming to about the size of a dime, and it doesn't get any larger. It's not edible. But the branches are so long. And they have to cut them back, and new ones come out. They reach probably 10 feet away from the central area of the bush.
Yeah.
And they're about 10 feet high. And, you know, I'm discouraged. How do I fix this problem so I get good fruit without these branches all over the place?
Figs, once the season gets started, are very aggressive growers. A lot of people in the Northeast who don't even protect their figs manage to get a crop, even though the plant died back to the ground, because it does grow so rapidly. That's what figs are supposed to do. And I got to tell you, 10 feet high is not wrong for a fig at all. Now, do you protect your fig tree at all over winter? Because I've been in your area several times, and I know your climate is much like mine in Pennsylvania.
No, I do not protect it. I planted it about 4 feet from a retaining wall.
That's good.
And it's in a corner because that's about 6 feet from my house.
Okay, that's good. Now, does a lot of the bush die back over the winter?
No, it does not die back.
Okay, so when it starts to green up, it greens up all the way up.
Well, the existing stalks, they don't stay alive.
Then that's what I'm asking. The whole bush dies back over winter. So here's what I'm going to suggest.
Okay.
I don't want you to prune it now. I don't know when you're doing this cutting back. I have a feeling you're constantly stressing the tree, because the fact that you get figs and they stay small for a long period of time is highly unusual. You're not using any kind of herbicides near the tree on your lawn or anything, are you?
No.
Okay.
No herbicides.
So I suspect that you're stressing the tree with this constant cutting during the season. So you have really two options here. If you're not going to protect it because it is in this protected area, in the spring, as soon as you see new growth appearing, which I'm presuming all of the new growth comes out of the root system in the ground.
Yes.
Okay. So in the spring, when you get that new growth, I want you to cut out all the dead wood, every little bit of it. And if some of the stalks with green growth on them are dead at the top, cut them back to where the green growth appears. And then I presume you haven't been feeding this or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Just give it a couple of shovelfuls of nice compost, yard waste compost, after you do the pruning in the spring. And then, no matter what, leave it alone. I mean, if there's one branch coming into your driveway and scratching your car, yes, cut that off. But don't do any more pruning after the pruning in the spring. Since you're getting figs that are sitting there for a long time and not growing well, I think you have a long enough season. I think the tree is protected enough. It sounds like a good variety for your region. Just leave it alone after that big pruning in the spring. Your other option would be to protect it over winter, but you're already complaining about the size. So I think this is the answer for you. Get rid of all the dead wood in the spring. That will improve the health of the tree like you can't even believe. It's going to stimulate new growth. Then if you leave it alone, I think your figs are going to achieve full size again.
The extent of the bush has really stretched out a lot. And I have other things out nearby that I'd like to grow as well.
You're going to have to dig the roots out of the ground then.
That's what my question is.
You just can't cut off the top growth. It's like cutting off a tree and trying to plant a tree in the same spot. That spot is already taken. You would have to have somebody get sharp shovels, pick the area that you want to keep the fig, do this in the dead of winter when everything is dormant, get down there with shovels, remove the root system from the area you want new stuff to grow. Then you'd have to put in something called rhizome barrier so the roots don't keep growing out into your garden there. And don't forget, anything you plant there is going to prevent you getting to the fig tree. All right?
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, good luck, Naomi.
Thank you, bye.
1-888-346-9499. Richard, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Richard. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good.
And where is Richard doing pretty good?
I'm in Warminster, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia. What can we do for you, sir?
I'm the go-to guy for the internet for my wife, who's the expert gardener, and I have two brown thumbs, so I only assist when she asks. And she wanted me to get one of those deer sprayer things to keep the deer out of her garden. And she said it has to be a scarecrow because that's what you recommended.
You mean a motion-activated sprinkler?
Correct. And I got on the internet to see what I could find, and I found six companies making scarecrow motion-activated sprinklers. And they looked almost like they were the same thing, and I wasn't fooled that it was like the same company. And finally it dawned on me there's like six of them, because one's solar operated with a rechargeable battery, another one's is 9 volts, another one's is 4 AA's, and some of them last 700 squirts and some of them are not specified. One explodes in the middle of the night to make a giant fountain and runs your bill up.
You're reading the reviews now too.
Yes, I'm reading the reviews, I'm seeing this stuff, I'm like saying, okay, there's junk out there, but I don't know which one is the good one.
Okay. Well, I have found that the reviews can be really helpful. Sometimes if it's just one guy doing one star and there's 85 stars, then you just realize he didn't get it. But if there's a consistent problem with things, it shows up. Now, you're both right. Your wife read an article at the A to Z section of our website on deer control. That article, because we've been on the air for 19 years, some of those articles are over a decade old. Uh-huh. And we've been working at updating them, doing the same topics again. But that information is all basically good. Motion-activated sprinklers, when they detect a body in the area, can be as small as a cat, can be a dog, can be a Canada goose, can be a neighbor walking on your property, can be a deer. The motion-activated sprinkler comes alive and shoots them with a couple of cups of cold water. It is hugely effective. Now, when I wrote that article, there was only one brand, only one model out there, and that was the, quote, scarecrow from a company called Contech.
Okay, that's weird.
No. It's been a long time, Rich.
No, I'm saying of the six companies, Contact is the one with the nicest looking packaging, the greatest graphics, and the worst reviews.
Well, it is the oldest of these things, and it is the original. Now, I have two scarecrows, and I still use them, and they work very well for me. However, a good friend of mine, Patrick, who moved into a new house a couple of years ago and who has followed my advice and become a family friend, he set up a huge garden in his suburban yard that has nothing but deer trouble. And he researched this, and there is another line called Orbit.
Okay, I think I saw that one.
And these are not the same looking, because I was over his house and we went out, and of course he asked me to pick some raspberries so I would get soaked. And I saw the way the Orbit works, and it might have been his water pressure or something, but it seemed to be much more powerful. It seemed to run the water for a little bit longer time. And were I going to buy one, I would give it serious consideration. But I would also look at the others. You know, I don't know of any out there that, quote, don't work. I mean, if you find, you know, a secondary brand that has nothing but negative reviews, obviously look away from that. But in my limited experience, which is just those two models, the Orbit one looks to be really good. You know, the basic issue is get it out there, so, and especially run it in the spring when the new deer are just experimenting, looking around, seeing where they're going to establish their turf. Hitting them with cold water in the spring may imprint them, so they won't come back to your property. And no matter what, you have to remember to turn this thing off and drain the hose over the winter, because if the water freezes, you'll damage your hose, you'll damage your couplings, you'll damage the device. Look around. Like I said, the Orbit ones seem to work really well. My experience with the Scarecrow is good, but there could be model changes and stuff like that. But you're on the right track. You know, unless you order something that has nothing but negative reviews, you'll do fine. And as long as it's not freezing out, this is the absolute best deer control for a controlled area.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man?
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck, Rich.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will get you ready to achieve compost success at the Lower Makefield Township building at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 28th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with bleeding oaks, stinging insects, and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, have you ever had the experience of coming out and there's sooty drips coming from a tree that are ruining your car and driveway, maybe even attracting bees and wasps that sting and terrify you? Well, that ain't sap, ladies and gentlemen. We will tell you what it is later in the show. But first, lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Pete, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. Hey, I have a little cherry tree that I bought from a nursery. It was about 6 or 7 feet tall. And I got it home, and I had it planted professionally by some landscapers.
Uh-oh.
And they popped it in the ground. And,
yeah, I bet
know,
they did.
It was looking nice for about a week or a couple weeks. Then all the leaves fell off.
Okay, and, so, Pete, I know what's wrong already. Now, where are you, man?
Oh, I'm in Clarksburg, Maryland. Beautiful Clarksburg, Maryland.
Okay, good. Is that near D.C.?
Yeah, it's a little north of Rockville, Maryland.
Okay,
which is
sure.
Right outside of D.C.
Right, okay, good. Now, when you bought the tree, was it in a pot or did it have its roots balled and burlapped?
No, it was in a pot. It was in like a plastic kind of pot holder.
You were not present when they planted it.
No, I was there. They kind of dug the hole, and they threw in some peat moss, and then they filled it up with a little bit of water, and then they planted it.
What?
It all looked really kind of nice.
What?
Yeah, well, I don't know. You know, I'm no landscaper. That's why I'm calling
well,
you.
neither were they, man. Oh, God. And this is good information for anybody, because, you know, right now is the perfect time for planting trees. As you may have realized, the nurseries are slashing the prices on their trees because they don't want to have to get them through the winter. And the survival rate, unless your people plant them, for trees planted in the fall is much better than in the spring because the tree just gets to go dormant and doesn't have to survive the brutal and, in your case, humid summers that come right after spring. So the first thing they did wrong was the peat moss in the hole. If you go on the website, and this isn't so much for you as everybody else who's getting ready to buy discounted but really good-sized trees, you never put any foreign soil in the planting hole because you want the roots of the tree to have to grow into your native soil. And if you fill that with all sorts of cool stuff, that's like your kid graduating college and you put a plasma TV into their bedroom. They're not going anywhere. They're going to stay in that nice, warm little hole. And throw water in the hole. It's like that's the most absurd. No, it's not the most absurd thing. It's up there. There's no reason for that.
So what happened was it went for a little while, and then the tree completely kind of defoliated to about the 85% mark, maybe 90%.
Yeah, no, it's dead, Jim. It's dead. You know, this is the time of year when trees start to turn color and lose their leaves. But if they do it within a week of planting, you can just call the coroner. Now,
I'll tell you this, Mike. It does pop out a couple leaves every once in a while. The leaves come out, you know, looking beautiful, like little leaves.
That's really
weird.
And
then what happens is the leaves kind of curl, turn brown, and get these holes in them.
When they planted the tree, can you see the root flare, or do you have a lollipop coming out of the ground?
I think I have more of a lollipop coming out of the ground.
Is it planted in or near a treated lawn?
It's planted in my yard, and I get my lawn treated every once in a while. It hasn't been for a while. February or March, I might have put down some stuff.
Okay, yeah. Well, the herbicides that are used these days are really persistent, and they're known for killing trees. So, in a nutshell, maybe there's a warranty on the tree. Maybe the nursery will replace it. But when the tree gets planted, it's planted high so that you can see some of the root structure above ground. You fill it back in with the same soil that was used to dig out the hole. You take a hose out to the tree right after it's planted, turn the hose to drip, 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 just slowly, like an annoying faucet, for like 8 hours. And then let the tree dry out for a day. And if it's hot and dry, we don't get rain, repeat that every other day or every third day until we get rain or until it gets really cool out. Never put mulch up against the trunk of any plant, especially a new tree. And your lawn doesn't need herbicides. It just needs to be cared for correctly. And if you play around with those things, you're going to lose landscape plants. So the physical reality of what you do now is I would call the nursery and say, it just died right away. Can I get a replacement tree? And then either got to watch these guys, get somebody else, or do it yourself. Go on the website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, go to the Garden Answers A to Z under trees. There's Tree Planting 101. It tells you to do exactly the opposite of what these guys do. But this was, the coroner now says multiple causes.
Thanks for your help. I appreciate it. I don't know anything about this stuff, so I got recommended to you by somebody who lives up in the Philly area.
Oh, great. Well, nobody knows exactly how to do this, which is why I have to have to do this, and I don't have to get a real job. So it works out real well for everybody.
Okay, Mike, thanks for your help, man.
All right, good luck, sir.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Catherine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Catherine. Where are you?
I'm in Pittsburgh, Kansas.
Oh, okay. What a crazy name. I mean, when you say you're from Pittsburgh, obviously people ask if you went to the Frank Lloyd Wright House, Falling Water, all the time. Right?
Exactly. And actually, there are a lot of Pittsburghs in town, and Pittsburgh with the H is the only one with the H, so we are just in its shadow constantly.
Well, that's interesting. What can we do for Catherine in Kansas?
It's kind of an oddball question, but whenever I put out hanging plants on my porch, I get house finches nesting in them, which is great. They're up above my head, so what I usually do, we get very, very hot here, and so I'm not much of a gardener, I'm learning, but petunias are fairly idiot-proof, and so I have to water them to capacity every day for them to survive the Kansas sun.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just put the hose up there until it runs out the drainage at the bottom, and then I move on to the next pot of petunias. Well, I've discovered that on some of those, I've got nests in there, and so obviously I can't flood them out or freeze them since they're cold-blooded, and I don't even necessarily know that they're there until they squawk, and then I get the hose off of them in a hurry or the mom flies out. And I don't know how to water the plants safely with the birds in there, so I usually just end up letting the plant die, and I have a pathetic-looking dead thing hanging on my porch.
No, you've got
the birds are gone.
No, you're one of the only people whose outdoor landscaping includes hanging birds' nests. I mean, this could become a huge trend. Just put the planters out and don't put anything in them. And then tell people, see, I got these hanging nesting boxes.
That's right. I'm into the fauna, not the flora.
So there's a couple of things we can talk about here. One, what are the hanging baskets made of? What's the material of the pot?
I think it's plastic. I usually just buy them straight from the greenhouse, and I don't repot them or anything. So it's just the basic green plastic things with the drainage hole on the bottom and the little tray.
Okay, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. If they were the hanging peat moss or core COIR baskets, they're impossible to keep watered, even without searing summer heat. So that's good. Can you hang them lower?
I probably could, but when I walk by on the porch, then the parents get all very agitated and they fly off. And one time I actually scared the babies out of the nest and had to try to round them up before anything happened to them. So
okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
I know they also have those things where you can lower the plants, but I haven't invested in those.
No, that's your
kind of ugly. But.
No, your observations are exactly correct. Them being down at your eye level and them seeing the movement is going to freak them out. Okay, so I have two options for you. One of which is to put, I guess one of the easiest ways I've had this described is when you put the plants in, before you hang them up, go out and buy like 1,000 chopsticks and make a little fence of chopsticks around the plant, around the outside perimeter. That may deter them. Another thing you might do is the finches, if we research, their nests are they kind of mud-covered and round, or are they just unruly things with dried plant material?
I'm not actually sure, because by the time I find them, they're mud-covered because I've watered them to death.
I think that's how they build their nest. I have birds' nests all over my house.
Yeah.
They nest in where the gutters poke out. They nest above air conditioners. It's a riot at our house. I just love it.
Yeah.
So I would do the chopsticks, and then I would have somebody, if it's possible at that height, make a couple of flat areas, just a little platform. Because I don't think finches will use nesting boxes, but you can go online and see if there's an inexpensive nesting. And actually, I know they use nesting boxes because they use an old birdhouse I have out in the front of my house. So if you go out and online or at a nursery or garden center, buy a bunch of inexpensive nesting boxes. Make sure they don't have any perches on the front, just the right size box in the hole. They may prefer the protection of that. And finally, there's a little device you can buy that helps you water plants that are up high. It's like a shepherd's hook that attaches to your hose. And then if all else fails and they've built nests in the hanging baskets anyway, use this shepherd hook to just come in gently on one side, water for like 10 seconds, and then before the water comes out the bottom, move on to the next hanging basket, do the same thing, go on to the next one, and then just go back in a line until water starts to drip out the bottom.
That sounds brilliant.
Yeah, when you water a hanging basket heavily, the soil is so dry, the water just runs out. But if you do it in stages, the soil becomes saturated, and you'll find that the plants will only need watering every third day or so with the soil being really saturated. And it won't be a mess underneath, and it won't be as disturbing to the birds.
Okay, fantastic.
All right, good luck, Kath.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your help.
Oh, my pleasure. What a great call. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jake, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm okay. Jake, how are you, sir?
I'm okay. Getting a lot of rain.
Okay. Where are we getting a lot of rain?
In Oklahoma City.
Oh, okay. Very good. Always good to hear from our friends down there. What can we do for you, Jake?
I have a cherry blossom tree that has had quite a few issues over the last 2 years that I've had it, and I was calling to try to see if I could get some advice on how to help it along.
Sure. What's the problem?
So I got it last March. My wife is from Japan, and it was our 5-year anniversary, so we got that tree together and put it in last March, and went through the summer, and around August, you know, the heat of the summer, it dropped a lot of the interior leaves, and then it made it through to this year, and we had a big storm in, I think it was March of this year, and the tree actually, I'd pulled the stakes on it, and the tree blew over. I went home that night and pulled it back over while the ground was still soft and staked it off again.
Mm.
And a couple of months later, when it was time to start watering the yard, I discovered that the new stake that I'd put through went right through my irrigation line. And so I had to dig that up and fix it and kind of got into the roots a little bit.
Okay.
And so it seemed to be doing fine again. And since then, you know, a couple months even later, it's nearly dropped all of its leaves now.
Okay. So ornamental cherry trees need two things. They need soil that drains exceptionally well, and they need full sun. If you have an underground irrigation system, I would suggest that one of the problems you're experiencing is root rot. When do you run your irrigation when you run it? How do you run it? How many times a week for how long?
Well, I don't really use it that often.
You don't get a lot of rain, man, especially for a tree that's still pretty young.
Yeah.
Jake, when you put a new tree in the ground, one of the biggest causes of death or stress is not adequately watering it for that full season.
Oh, sorry. I misunderstood.
And even after, you know, for a couple of years, your climate is brutal in the summertime. I mean, yes, a lot of areas of the country got really unusual rains this summer, but you planted it 2 years ago, and I believe that summer was hideously dry. How do you water?
I don't water my grass that often with the irrigation system, but I did have tree gators on them.
Okay, those kill trees.
Okay.
You think about what's going on, man. You've got this green bag going halfway up the trunk that's preventing air from getting at the trunk and keeping it constantly moist. That's about as unnatural as you can get. Staking a tree, depending on how the business end goes around the tree, that can girdle the bark and kill a tree. Now, your winds are legendary. What you really need to be doing is having this tree planted in a protected area where it's not exposed to the full force of your legendary winds, but still gets a lot of sun. But no tree should need to be staked for a long period of time. I've never staked any tree, and I've never had any issues. But staking for a long period of time can really harm trees. If you don't want to move it to an area where at least it gets a little bit of the wind broken, I think you've got to take that staking system off.
Okay.
Get the gator bag off. Make sure there's nothing touching the trunk, no mulch or anything like that. If the tree is planted too deeply in the ground and looks like a lollipop, try to excavate an area around the trunk. Get some air and sunlight on the trunk so the trunk isn't rotting. And then if you go a week without rain in season, the best thing to do is take a hose and let it drip at the base of that tree for a couple of hours in the early morning once a week if it's just normal Oklahoma heat, and twice a week if it's that brutal time when you're up in the 90s, even at night sometimes. Young trees especially need to be watered really carefully and correctly. Go to our website. Go to youbetyourgarden.org. I want you to read two things under A to Z. One is T for trees, tree planting 101, and the other is W for wise watering. Read the article on watering especially, and that may change the way you approach this. But if you take care of it now, get rid of the bag, get rid of the stakes, if heat continues or you get a really nasty Indian summer, so to speak, make sure you water deeply at the base once a week. I don't like these irrigation systems at all, but if you got it and you're stuck with it and you're going to run it, only run it for long periods of time occasionally, like once or twice a week. The worst thing you can do is water any plant, including your grass, for 20 minutes every day. That kills plants. So if you do everything correctly, let's see how it looks in the spring. No food, no tree stakes, no chemical fertilizers, nothing like that. A nice shovel full of yard waste compost around the base of the tree, not touching the trunk, would maybe give the tree some nutrients it needs now and give it a little bit of strength. But get rid of all this stuff on top of it. You know, you never see this on trees in the woods.
Right.
All right. Good luck, sir.
All right. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will be honored to once again host the Empty Bowl Dinner to benefit homeless families on Wednesday evening, November 15th, at the Lutheran Theological Seminary on Germantown Avenue in Philadelphia. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with drippy trees, stinging insects, and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will tell you that sap dripping from your trees is not sap at all. It's an insect problem that attracts other insects like wasps that sting you. We'll take care of all those problems after a couple more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Dennis, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, thank you, Dennis. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. And you today?
I am just ducky. Thanks for asking. Where is Dennis good?
in Columbia, New Jersey, which is near the Delaware Water Gap.
Oh, okay, good, because you know when you say Columbia, New Jersey, everybody scratches their head, you know.
Yeah, it's a little town.
Yeah, I thought I knew every corner of the Garden State, but that's nice. You're right there near the river, huh?
Yes, right along the river.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, what can we do for Dennis in the Garden State?
Okay, well, I have a lot of hosta on my property.
Yeah.
And the question is, what do I do with the stalks after the flowers have bloomed? I have, for years, just left them until the stalks turned brown, and then sometime either in early December or late February, I would kind of give them a little tug and just pull them out and pile them up. But recently, somebody told me it was a good idea to cut them right after the flowers bloom. So I'm not sure what to do.
Hostas are really unique in the plant world. They are the Mack truck of shade-loving perennials. All of the things that I would say are firm rules with other perennials don't apply to hostas because you can't kill them. They really thrive under virtually all conditions. Now, you face a situation where there's no right or wrong, but there is personal choice involved. So as you know, even in deep shade, hostas, once they reach a certain point in the late spring, will send up these beautiful flower stalks with these beautiful purple flowers on top. And it's just amazing. They can turn your yard into a fireworks show overnight. And the flowers are pretty persistent, and I've noticed more and more a lot of native bees and bumblebees going in and taking pollen and nectar from those flowers. So they're tremendously pretty and beneficial. When the flowers fade, exactly as you say, you get these long green seed pods that form. Now, my old buddy Martha Stewart would say, always leave anything like that standing for, quote, winter interest. Anything you can get as we proceed into the darker months that provides color and just something up high to see that's alive is always a good idea in the garden. So that's one reason to leave the seed heads alone. Now, if this were a different type of plant, your friends would be right. Removing the seed heads might be instrumental to getting a good flowering show the following season. But hostas don't care. Hostas are going to flower no matter what. One bonus to leaving those seed pods stand over the winter is as they dry and the weather gets cold, they will crack open. And then the seeds become food for songbirds that do not migrate, that live with us year long. The downside, if you want to grow something other than hostas, is those birds do live at your house and they're going to poop out the seeds and you're going to get even more hostas. So it's your choice. You've got that nice color up high. You've got something happening in your garden that's not low to the ground. You're providing food for the birds, but it will give you more hostas. I love the hosta display I have in the front of my house, and I always leave the seed pods up. And the way I handle the extra hostas, literally I just go in and weed whack in the early spring and late spring until it looks like I've planted these wonderfully professional clusters and shapes. And really, it's more like a marble sculpture. I've just cut away the stuff that doesn't work for the final look.
Well, they are very, very pretty and very powerful plants. When I first was transplanting them, I was very careful to get the big root ball out. And then a couple of times I was a little more lazy, and those plants thrived as much as the ones I was very careful in moving. They're very, very strong. You can't kill them. And then, as you said, the purple flowers come out, and there is about a week when the daylilies are still in bloom and the hosta come out, and we have the orange and the purple at the same time, and it's really, really a tremendous, beautiful look.
I can't think of another shade-loving plant that blooms as high or as prolifically as a hosta. They are absolutely essential in the front of my house, which is deeply shaded.
Well, I'm going to do what you do, and as I've done for a number of years, just let the seed pods pop open. I didn't realize that the birds would eat them, but we get a lot of bloom, and the more the better as far as I'm concerned. So I'm not going to cut them. I'm just going to leave them.
Yeah. With other plants, you should get rid of seed pods to get good flowering next year. But with hostas, they don't care, man.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, sir. Great question. Thank you for bringing it up.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Barbara, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Barbara. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am just ducky. Thank you for asking. Barb, where is Barb fine?
I'm fine in Muncie, Indiana.
Excellent. Excellent. What can we do for Barb in Muncie?
Well, I've been planting a lot of perennials, native plants to Indiana, and I'm trying to attract butterflies and birds. And every time I go out in my flower bed and dig up a scoop of soil, I am surprised at all the grubs in there. So I handpick them out like a crazy person, and then I plant my flowers. So my question is, I don't really use any pesticides or herbicides. And I know there's something called milky spore and nematodes, but I suppose my main question is, should I even be picking them out and worrying about them, or should I try the milky spore, the nematodes, or what do you suggest?
Okay, so grubs in general are the larval form of one of the members of the scarab beetle family. The most famous member is the Japanese beetle. But there's also an Asiatic beetle that flies by night and isn't generally seen in the garden. Rose chafer beetles. It's a fairly good-sized family. Mm-hmm. And did you have a lot of Japanese beetle damage over the summer?
Yes, and I walked around the yard with a can of soapy water and collected as many as I could.
Good. Yeah, so you're absolutely right to be concerned. Two things. First of all, unless we do something, every grub down in the soil is going to turn into an adult plant-munching beetle of some kind, probably a Japanese beetle. And mm-hmm. in the meantime, those grubs actually eat quite a bit. If they were in your lawn, they'd be eating the roots of your grass. Around perennials like this, they will nibble at the roots of any plant that they can get a hold of. And these grubs start out really tiny, the size of a grain of rice. And so you can imagine how much plant material they have to get to be their adult size, which is as big as your thumb. So they feed in both forms, which is unusual. Most insects like this either feed in the larval form or the adult stage, but scarab beetles feed in both forms. Now, we're closing in on Halloween. What's the soil temperature like? What's the weather like? We've had quite a bit of unnaturally warm weather here in the mid-Atlantic, but what about you?
Yes, we've had very warm weather. In fact, today it's 80 degrees and humid. It feels more like late August.
Normally, this would be too late in the season to do anything, but because your soil temperature is nice and warm, you can spread milky spore disease, which is a white powder, over your flower beds and water it in as directed. And it will get down, and I believe the grubs, if they're still active, if you see them, they're still eating. And that sounds like they're right at the right stage, full size. If they ingest one of these spores, they will not only die, they'll turn into a little milky spore factory that manufactures more of this naturally occurring soil organism in a natural manner. So I would definitely get the milky spore. It is only effective in the fall. It will not work in the spring because in the spring the grubs don't feed anymore. They have to be feeding in warm soil. So I would get to the first independent local garden center nursery I can find and get some milky spore and put it down right away. Every minute counts.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
In the spring, if you want to prevent them from rising up as armored adults, yes, you would mail order beneficial nematodes and you would monitor the soil temperature. Now, you can get a soil thermometer and insert it 4 inches down and you'll know immediately when it's warm enough. and all the information about buying nematodes will tell you what the soil temperature has to be. You water it into the soil. And if the soil is warm enough, those nematodes will work their way through the soil. They will actually be predators. They will follow these grubs, and then they will worm their way into their body and destroy them. But you need a certain warm soil temperature. So I would do Milky Spore now. I would do nematodes in the spring as soon as the soil temperature gets warm enough. And, you know, if both of them even have a limited action, you may not have any kind of Japanese beetle problems of any proportion next year. But then, if you do, then you can start with the nematodes in like early September when they're guaranteed to wipe these suckers out.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, I'll try it.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
My pleasure. You take care.
You too. Bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week, when drippy trees attract danger. Alexis Landis, producer of the Drippy Show, You Bet Your Garden, please get us started by reading this week's question.
Sure, Mike. Well, we heard from Steve in Rockville, Maryland, one of my old stomping grounds. He writes, "We recently moved into a home with a lot of trees, including a large oak that wonderfully shades our house and driveway in the summer. However, over the past few days, sap drippings, or something else that is oily but clear, have appeared all over the cars, sidewalk, and driveway under the tree. And it's attracting bees, wasps, and hornets. It's becoming a hazard to try and get into our cars or enjoy our front yard. Our 5-year-old daughter and many of the neighborhood children play right in front of our house, and she and one other girl were stung by bees over the weekend. Is it normal for trees to drip so much sap that it attracts bees? Do I have to ban my daughter and her friends from the front yard?" Mike, wait a minute. You answered this question in a recent phone call. It's aphids up in the tree pooping out their sweet honeydew, which attracts all kinds of insects, right?
Yes and no. Steve might well have aphids up in his tree. There's even an aphid species that's specific to oaks. But the wonderfully euphemistic honeydew that's pooped out by aphids is blackish in appearance, not the clear material that Steve describes. Aphid honeydew, in fact, is so dirty looking that it's often described as, quote, sooty.
As are you.
Steve's problem sounds more like, and I am not making this name up, drippy nut disease. The unusually warm weather we've had in the Mid-Atlantic region and the clear color of the fluid are strong clues to this diagnosis. The cause is a bacterium that infests nuts, in this case acorns, that have been insect damaged, and it won't stop until those acorns drop. So for now, Steve needs to diligently clean the sticky stuff off his driveway and walkway with a pressure washer. He should also put out lots of wasp and hornet traps to knock down the stinging insect population. And he should collect and destroy all the dropped acorns this fall.
What about the cars?
Oh, good point. He needs to get to a car wash ASAP and get every little last bit of that, quote, sap off the cars. Then he should really try and park someplace else till these acorns fall, use car covers, or rinse the new sap off every day. These drippings can be impossible to remove if you leave them on for a long time.
Can he prevent this from happening next year?
Well, an important component of trying to prevent future infestations is going to be avoiding chemical fertilizers on the lawn, and especially on the tree itself. High-powered chemical fertilizers make plants much more prone to insect attack. And whether this is drippy nut disease or oak leaf aphids, insects are still at the heart of the problem.
Okay, what else?
Well, aphids in trees are a common problem. We've gotten a lot of calls and emails about them this season. So at the first sign of any sooty honeydew, spray the tree down hard with sharp streams of water. Again, a pressure washer is going to be ideal for this kind of work. Studies have found that being hit with sharp streams of plain water are more effective aphid control than pesticides. The key is to make that stream a laser-like shot of H2O.
And if you want to go for the gold, release beneficial insects whose larval forms feed on aphids, like ladybugs, which are good, and lacewings, which are even better. They're available to homeowners via mail order and just plain fun to have around.
as am I. Oh, again, never feed trees chemical fertilizers or use chemical fertilizers near where the affected trees are growing. The lush, unnaturally fast growth these chemicals cause attracts every aphid in the area.
But what if the, quote, sap being clear means that it is drippy nut disease?
Well, the potential cures here are going to be close to the same. Although the disease is caused by an unpronounceable bacterium, insects like filbert weevils and a caterpillar called the filbert worm cause the actual damage to the acorns. And it's very common for oak tree aphids to also get in on the action. So I would power wash the aphids out of the tree at the first sign of sooty sap, and then spray the original form of BT, the organic caterpillar control, when the acorns reach a certain size. Your local agricultural extension office should be able to tell you when the, quote, worms are first becoming active.
What about these pesky weevils you mentioned? And why do all these nut-specific pests have the word filbert in their name?
Well, sources disagree, but filberts are either another name for hazelnuts or the name of a specific variety of hazelnut. And hazelnuts are a cash crop that a lot of research has been devoted to. The same pests do attack the acorns on oak trees, but there's no commercial value in acorns. And so all the research has been devoted to the filberts, and that's how those pests got their name. Oh, and before we finish up, we need to point out that the stinging culprits here are certainly members of the wasp and hornet families. Honeybees aren't going to sting unless you step on them. If the attacker looked like a bee, I bet it was an aggressive yellow jacket. Well, that sure was some interesting information about trees dripping so-called sap now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to attract aphids to my acacia if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. But don't send it unless you're going to include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares where you live, but where you will find the answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. We continue to send get well wishes to Elizabeth Perez Luna, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter continues to play our theme song. Our parole officer is Sweet Staven Naomi Sturrobin. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website unsappy. Oki Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY in Philadelphia. Our editor is Nutty Al Banks. Our brand new intern is Robert Fogarty. Our associate producer of Production Association is Brett Rader. I'm your host, Sappy Mike McGrath, and I'll see you again next week. Unless somebody hoses me down out of the tree, of course. This is the time of year many people feel compelled to, quote, clean up the landscape. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll review the many reasons you should not be cutting back roses, figs, or any other plants in the fall. Plus your fabulous phone calls.